Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm all about big stars today doing press really early the morning after playing a show.
Yeah,
they're just like us.
They're just like us.
Stars, just like us. Getting up for work.
Everyday folk.
I was at the Albert Hammond Jr. show the night before I recorded this podcast, and it was a good time.
Where did he play?
Brooklyn Steel.
Okay. That venue is really doing things.
Yeah, I think they get a whole crowd of artists coming through New York who want to play that sort of place but don't want to play Terminal 5.
Exactly, yeah. I don't blame them.
They just do like maybe two shows there back to back instead of the one Terminal 5 show.
Yeah. So this is Albert's second album?
No,
second
he has a lot of stuff. He's been releasing solo material since 06.
Oh, wow. See, I just did not even realize. And I need to listen. I need to really sit down and listen to his stuff.
This is the best solo thing he's done.
So is this a good place to start?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's a 10-song album. Really catchy. It's groovy. I love it.
I love a good groove.
So this conversation, this was 10:30 a.m. or maybe it was 10 a.m. The memory's foggy, but right after him playing a show at Brooklyn Steel, came by the Billboard office, and I respect that. And I told him that. Actually, and I didn't know this, it was actually the biggest solo show he'd ever played.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did he say he was nervous, or it probably makes no difference to him.
I don't think he was nervous, but he just seemed very gratified by it.
Yeah. Did he talk about Julian at all?
No, we didn't talk about Julian.
I wonder if he's sick of talking about the voids. Julian. I'm curious to know what he thinks about them, though.
I mean, when I brought up Meet Me in the Bathroom, because I'm reading it right now, and I was like super psyched to talk about it, his response was like, I don't want to make noise in this podcast.
Oh, my God. I need to start that book. I have it sitting next to my bed.
I started it, and it was really good, and then I just got distracted.
Yeah.
And now I'm back at it. I'm like over a third in.
Okay, cool.
It's a big book, but because it's so dialogue-driven, it's a quick read.
Okay, that's good to know. I feel like my whole collection of books are just big books about like some history of music, and then when I get home at the end of the day after reading about like the current state of music, it could be a lot. So I find myself going to teen fiction.
reading like some YA, and the Spotify IPO just pops up and you're like, fuck.
That's exactly it.
So yeah, you should check out the Albert Hammond Jr. album.
I think I really need to do that today.
What have you been listening to lately?
I keep returning to the Soccer Mommy album. That is one that's really lingered long after its release. I talked to Snail Mail recently. That was cool. And the Tom Misch album. I think it comes out tomorrow, maybe.
Who is this?
Tom Misch.
I'm not even familiar.
Whew, he is a London jazz man who fuses a little bit of funk and hip hop in his music. The album is very, very good. He's actually playing Brooklyn Steel in May.
There you go. This podcast
full
sponsored
circle.
By Bowery Presents. No, we're just kidding. Lindsay, shout out any projects you're working on, writing you got coming up.
Let's see. I just did something on Record Store Day. I interviewed Run the Jewels, who are the ambassadors this year. So that's very exciting. And then What else am I working on? I don't know. I'm going to see Lord tonight.
Hell yeah.
Very excited about
that. Oh, the Barclays show.
Yeah, that'll be good.
And they're, Run the Jewels opening.
Exactly.
And Mitski.
Yeah, she goes on at like 6:30. I'm not going to make it.
Oh, man, I would love to see Mitski play the Barclays Center. Right?
I can't even imagine.
Oh, I'm just going to like watch her Twitter right after the show and see what takes she has about playing an arena show.
Oh, I know. I'm here very curious to see about the crowd, but should be good.
Lindsay Havens, writer, editor with Billboard. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
And I will leave you guys a little bit of Albert Hammond Jr. This is probably my favorite hook off of a very hooky new album. It's called Francis Trouble. Playing us into my talk with Albert. This is D versus L. So how do you think the show went last night?
I mean, I had a lot of fun. It was a packed room. I don't know. There's so many emotions happening all at once that you almost need to... It wasn't until this morning that it kind of sank in a little more, you know? I didn't get to say a lot of things I wanted to say about it, about how special it was to actually... get there, you know.
Are these special emotions New York centric?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a mixture of I would have felt that way in New York, but also the fact that it was the biggest show I had played to date, so it was kind of like, you know, it's like the ball goes rolling and it just gets you go to places you haven't been, you get more people than you had before, and then you go back home and it's bigger. It's just a nice feeling.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, so I didn't know that was the biggest show you've played, like solo?
Yeah.
Wow, all right. Yeah.
I'm not counting festivals.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Wow.
Obviously, because festivals are for just me, yeah.
Yeah, that's something to celebrate. And plus, a crowd at... a club show on your tour is always going to be better than a festival crowd.
Yeah, for sure. Of course. Well, you can also do different set lists, which I think what makes it fun. In a festival, you're just trying to, like, you know, be the part of the roller coaster that's going down where you're just yelling for like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And a show can have a little more ups and downs.
Yeah. For those listening, we're talking about Brooklyn Steel.
Yeah.
Last night. Kind of a new venue, so that also must play into, like, because you've played so many venues in New York over the years. This one just popped up last year, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that part was really exciting when we were looking at where to play. Really, really cool venue. I wish, really, really, really cool venue.
Yeah. Francis Trouble.
Indeed.
It's a good, I'm really feeling the album. It's a good chorus album.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I feel,
just
like.
Songs, you know, good songs.
Slinging some good choruses last night.
Yeah, well, I mean, I felt like I wanted to make that kind of record.
Yeah. Screamer is my favorite, though, and you didn't play Screamer.
I know, it's so weird. We play 8 out of the 10 songs on the album, and the two we don't play is Stop and Go and Screamer, and they've both been called out for, and it's not like any reason. It's just, you know, I thought Screamer would be the first song we would do. It just happened that we were learning stuff and tour started, and we just didn't add it into the early opening sets, and so it's just a little behind. But I imagine on like the next tour it'll come out. Yeah, I know, it's one of my favorites.
That song is such a tight song, though.
It's one of my favorites, too. Woo-hoo! Yeah, I know, it's fun to do that. Well, that's there you go with choruses. You see, that's like, it's like there's some call and response stuff where it's fun for the crowd because they know it. And then, like, it's like in Dark Versus Light that I don't even want to say. I see people, like, singing along to it because they get to be a part of the show.
Yeah. Like, I'm picking up, like, it must feel really just gratifying for you, like, after so many tours with the Strokes and after, like, putting in all this time with, like, your solo work, too. Like, getting to this point where you're getting, like, such packing rooms like this with just Albert Hammond Jr. music.
Yeah, I mean, I what's funny is when I finished making this record and then I was lucky enough to find Red Bull and the combination, Red Bull Records and the combination was just so, felt so good. It felt like I'd found like a home. Mm-hmm. It's which is a rare thing in the business side of music to feel that way. You know, when I was opening up for the Killers in arenas and I was like, oh, I felt like I belonged in that. So it was just like, my goal was to go there.
This was recent, right? When you were...
Yeah, recent. Yeah. This was February, you know?
And Franz Ferdinand too, right?
Yeah.
Some old friends, those two bands?
Yeah, I mean, I became... I don't think I ever really... I met the Killers in passing. Became friendly with Ronnie before this tour. And Franz, I saw them a long time ago in England and we were backstage and I kind of jammed with them and I was friends with the guitar player that left, Nick. Friendly. But yeah, I mean, it was... Touring with them was amazing. They were so... nice. It was so much fun to open for them.
I'm in the middle of reading Meet Me in the Bathroom right now, so I'm kind of piecing together like a lot of these like friendships that go way back, you know.
I mean, I don't know how much I don't want to make noise in this podcast, but I want two of these guys. I don't know how much that's going to give, because it's really hard to... It's like when you read Please Kill Me, you know? It's... You're getting small moments from people over 10 years. And so the thing you piece together is I don't know, it's not... It's romanticized life.
Sure.
You know? It's just like a movie. You know, they have to... Everything you do, you have to... exaggerate a little bit to make it feel right, because life has a lot more slower ups and downs, or even if they're fast, they never come across in a book or a film the way it actually is.
Yeah, the boring parts aren't in there. It's the really good parts and the really maybe sad parts. But it's
I don't know if it's boring. It's just I feel like what you would call the boring parts are really, really beautiful parts of life.
Yeah.
You know?
They're relaxing. But yeah, before we get to, I could talk about that book before, because I'm really, really feeling it. But before we go down that rabbit hole, talking about like your new album and like the mindset you're at right now, like, yeah, tell me about, because you must be kind of discovering new things about music and starting out with like a band that maybe you missed with the Strokes because it was so long ago, or because things happened so fast, or just because you were so young. Like, what's new now?
I think your perception changes, and that creates and if you allow it and you accept that change, you rediscover things all the time. A big change happened in my early 30s when I had a little wane in my feelings towards music, and then I fell in love with Misfits and Wire and Wipers, and I got this resurgence and excitement that I hadn't felt in a long time. And I feel like most people find those bands in their teenage years, but I found them, I guess, my teenage years of my 30s. And I feel like it's what helped bring me to where I am now, in the sense that of the energy I have now. I feel like I make more visceral music like that now than I did when I started.
Sure.
Which is a good arc that I like. I never thought it would be like that, only through looking back. But I don't know. I feel like as you like stuff, you change, you forget why you started something. All this stuff happens. You build, success gives whatever insecurities you have more power. Mm. And you build all the stuff around you. And then, you start to realize that that it's, you're living right now, and it's not like something that's going to happen later. And I started to try to find ways to get out of myself and put myself in not uncomfortable positions, just different spots to see, like, be okay with like having big mistakes. You know what I mean? I feel like that creates such good new things. Because comfort and familiarity are just a terrible place to live in.
Did some big mistakes wind up happening?
Well, no. I just feel like to create, you have to be able to poke fun at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to allow yourself to do something that's dumb or was bad or was cheesy to then get to where you want to get to. I just mean, like, allowing that process. If you want to look at mistakes, the whole... To get the arc to get to here, I feel like I've had to make many mistakes and not be who I wanted to be in front of people. And all my solo records up till here, I feel like I had gaps that I knew I was missing but had to accept to move forward. I mean, that was hard.
Yeah.
Makes you want to stop sometimes.
So take me through your mindset when you made your first solo record. This was Yours to Keep,
yeah.
2006. You sort of hinted at the stylistic influential changes in your music, but take me back to your mindset then. Like, what made you want to make your own album? What was going on in your head back then?
I didn't. I had demos, and I've had demos since I was 16, and I just felt like if I didn't finish something, I would never get better. I would never move on. And so I was just like, I just want to go record this one song. It was cartoon music for superheroes, and I want to, like, have it be like, here, it's done. Listen to it. I'm not going to remix it, or it's not like, it's very easy to be like, well, it's not totally done, and, like, you're constantly changing. So that started, and it just kept on growing, and we had fun, and went from, like, little rooms to bigger rooms to studios. And I didn't really even think anything of it more than the exercise of completing it. That was what ended up that. And then I ended up touring it. I don't know how I got convinced to do that, but I ended up doing like 128 shows in 9 months on that record, which was fun. And then the second record was just because I hated the fact that people... And they say, I don't like the word singer-songwriter. I don't like acoustic guitar. It was just like the opposite of what I've ever wanted to be perceived at. And so my second record was just like, I don't know, it was just like thick in just hating that, And there's some really cool songs on that, but it was just, the first record was the innocence of drug abuse, and the second one was like, the darkness of it. So I feel like some of the quality went away because of that. There's still great songs there, but there's just as a whole. And then the EP was definitely exciting for me. I just did it, Gus and I just did it, the two of us, and it was like a new beginning. I felt like I had new songs, and I hadn't written or completed stuff for a while. And then Momentary Masters was a result of that touring that, and this band that had formed. And then this record was a result of finally being able to say, that's why I keep on saying the arc, finally being able to say that I understand where I am. I'm perceived in in a rock history story through the media as a guitar player in a band, and through that history it's kind of like a typecast that you get given. You know, you don't know this doing this. And when I started, I loved writing, I loved singing, I loved playing guitar. And then I realized that I wanted to sing and be able to say that, yeah, I think I'm a great frontman. I think I'm a great entertainer. I feel like I've got great songs. Is to be able to say that and really feel it, you know? And so it wasn't until here that I felt like my goal on this record was to change that narrative and to be like, your perception of me isn't correct. You know?
That I am Albert Hammond Jr. I'm not Albert Hammond Jr. of the Strokes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one part of my life. But it's funny that it happens because I'm a junior already. That's like, mm-hmm. you know, trying to find your own identity. And you get into a band and like, oh, you're this, you know. And even the way early press saw me, it was so funny because I was like, I grew up with bands. You'd want to be like more sarcastic and funny in interviews. And everyone was always so serious. And so, I don't know. It was just... I don't even know how to put it, or maybe I just did.
You know what's funny? Mentioning the junior, it makes me think, from reading press you've done lately and people who've interviewed you, I feel like no one really asks about your dad anymore.
Well, I mean, no, they do. But I just don't know. It, you know, like, yeah. I wouldn't know what to say. Like, what do you mean?
Like, no, I'm guessing like when you guys were first starting out, there are probably like a lot of questions about that because people knew Albert Hammond from like his hit songs.
Sure, sure. I mean, yeah, I definitely have always thought I wish I could go back and change my name so no one would know. Yeah, sure. There was questions. I don't know. It's like, when I fell in love with music, it was a very personal thing and had nothing to do with my father. And I always carved out this special moment. The same way if, you know, you fall in love with someone in your teenage years, you think it's uniquely yours. Mm-hmm. You don't think other people do it. You don't think, oh, that's not my parents.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's a uniquely your thing. And so people ask me about that. I almost freeze because I don't know what to say because... I didn't feel any connection. And even when early on, I felt like I was different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get confused. I got to find a better way to answer it, I guess. Sorry, Dad. You're great.
How's he doing these days?
He's on tour in Europe. He seems to be doing, really well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Hey, because I remember like when I was first getting into the Strokes, is like my dad's like a huge like 60s, 70s rock fan. Like I knew songs like Free Electric Band and It Never Rains in California from like him always playing like these like CDs in the house when I was growing up. And when I first got into the Strokes, like he was totally like not following current music at all. But I was like, oh, Albert Hammond's son is in the band. He was like, oh, okay.
Oh, I'll give it a listen then. That's funny. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, dads are cool.
Yeah, dads are cool.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we talked about kind of like your big picture mindset with the new album. Let's talk about like songwriting a little bit.
Okay.
What went into this? Because like I was saying, I really feel like it's a chorus album, but I don't know. However you take that, and maybe talk about like your guitar technique and how that's evolved too in writing these choruses.
Sure. I mean, so I feel like touring and recording life kind of go hand in hand. They feed off each other. So you come back from touring and you feel like you've been on the road and you kind of can feel what you were missing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a certain visceral aspect that I wanted, something that would bring people together, move people. I just like the idea of like the first impact just being like an explosion. And so I had these thoughts, and then the early demos, you know, I could just tell they were having them because they'd be like these little parts, and all of a sudden we'd have this really exciting song. And I think the choruses became strong because we just, nothing would stay that wasn't better than the last thing. And we were constantly like, even if something was exciting, if something came out of it that was more exciting, it just went away right away. And I think that's what kept it fresh and moving. And we didn't like, we worked on it hard, but we didn't stay on it where we beat it to death. If we had to beat it to death, it was something better had to come out of it.
Because
I feel like that's sometimes too, you can take music and take some of the fun out of it. But and also wanted to keep it a little more live, this record, a little more free. And I think you can feel that in how the drums and guitars interact with each other and the vocals. My guitar technique. I mean, the only thing really I can say is I learned parts of an early Metallica solo, Hotel California, and While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And I've literally used little riffs from all that stuff. I mean, Screamer, some of the bends and solos is Hotel California.
Okay.
I rewrote the GFC solo based on this Metallica riff, and you know, you start to see, that's the only thing that happens. Maybe I've become a little more disciplined in learning new things or in practicing, but I don't really know. Because like, for instance, Rocky's Late Night, that guitar riff, or even Far Away Truths, the riff, we were just sitting there. Far Away Truths was a different song. It was like I had a title on this different song. And then Gus like went to go get a sandwich or something. And then I was just like sitting with the guitar. And I just started playing that riff for some reason, or that rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, is that cool? He's like, yeah. And then we just kind of like keep going with it. And then I hear it now and I was like, did I write that? You know, it's, because I don't know. I think it just comes from, it's a consistency of just playing and just, you know, your ear picks up on stuff you
sure.
like.
Sure. Now I'm waiting on something you said, like a waitress, too good to forget, like the words sung over cassette. Cool. Let's talk about like kind of the title and the concepts around the album too.
Sure.
So this was inspired by a discovery you found out about Brother?
Well, sorry. I keep on doing that right into the mic. Don't hate me. Yes and no. It's not. Nothing is ever just one thing. It's a series of collected universal gifts that then create something. You know, imagine it like creating is like one grain of sand doesn't show you the beach.
Sure.
You know, but it is the beach. So, you know, I wanted to make this kind of record. I was doing it. There's that work into that. And then finding out, I already knew about my stillborn twin, but finding out just in the information that just seemed like we might have collided or just, I don't know, this when you get told stuff you hadn't known or part of a story from an aunt that's telling it like she told you 1,000 times but you'd never heard it, your imagination can go crazy with it. You know, you've shared such an intimate space. There was this chance. It just reminded me then, and I was already working with the idea of, just in life in general, not alter ego, but just getting out of myself to change myself. And so it just added to that and just seemed like, well, what are the odds that I got told this now when I was already doing this? Like, maybe this is like the way I should go. And then you just start reliving parts of your youth, imagining brother, but really just seeing yourself at certain times. And so it brought out more true parts of me, if that makes sense. Like, peaks that I remember of like when you're younger, there's certain moments where you're truly yourself at that time. And so just like, you can never really get it because it's a memory, but just to relive it in those thoughts, I don't know, it's just a way to help creativity, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Telling a story. Hey, Cameron. And yeah, it just, I felt like, I think I was saying this earlier, with that, whatever walls you build from your insecurities as you get older, and whatever, like, you know, you get older and it's very easy. That's, I feel like, how you get jaded is you start to see things a certain way and then you just immediately say, that's like that, mm-hmm. that's like that. And then you don't allow even, it's very important to, like, you can not like something and disagree, but if you're able to take 5% that you like, then take that and throw away the rest. You mm-hmm. don't need to like the whole thing to have it change your move you. So I don't know, just all these aspects, and just that aspect just cemented the deal. I've been telling people it's like the stitching in a jacket. You know, you don't notice it, no one thinks about it, but it's there and it's what's shaping it.
Mm-hmm. And the name Francis Trouble, where does that come from?
Oh, I don't know. I've always been looking for a name.
Okay.
I've always wanted to change my name. Trouble came... I was singing the song for my dog
once. Okay.
Because she was walking on the street, and it just seemed like she owned the street, and then it became like Trouble Productions, and I was like, what I would be producing under... And, but I wanted like a name for the person. I just liked Francis. It just, mm-hmm. He seemed, slightly mischievous, but I don't know. I just liked the name and what it made me feel. And so just, I've just had Francis Trouble for a while, and it just made sense on this mm-hmm. record. That's what I mean. Like, you store, you just always storing little things, and then things come together and you start thinking about them and they go away and they come back like a tide. And then eventually you're like, oh, this, all of this I have fits and becomes like a bigger thing than what it is by itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's never like sitting down like, you know, I'm Francis Trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like this and like this. I feel like if it was like that, it wouldn't allow for change. What's so nice about the constant discovery is it allows it to move. And I think sometimes to commit to new things, it's too much to just say, I'm going to do that, mm-hmm. you know?
It's a good name.
Yeah, I mean, I really like it. Looks good on the album cover, too.
Words. So we're getting a little short on time here, but want to talk about Meet Me in the Bathroom a little bit?
Sure, if you want to.
I mean, I'm really, really, I'm about a third of the way into the book. I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, like, you must have done, spent so much time doing interviews for this. Like, did you get a chance to read it, and, like, what did you come away with it? Like, how do you think you came off?
Yeah, I sat with Lizzie for many hours. I didn't read it. I kind of got parts through my wife and my mom reading it. Yeah, I mean, I only know how when I was telling the story and talking to Liz, it was just Lizzie. It was just fun memories, funny stories. You know, I think it's like, it's something that should be taken like that. I feel like it gets taken so seriously. I don't know if it's like modern culture, but it's just like, as soon as got like some young press girl from England writing a review about it, and what she wrote about another review was just so weird to me. But I don't know, people enjoy it. That's the point of it, I guess, right?
Yeah. It was cool to read that you first came to New York for like acting school or film school.
Film school, yeah.
Because you've been doing some acting recently. So I was like, oh, there's some connections there.
Well, I mean, I always wanted to do it. I think I was just afraid to do it, to mm-hmm. be honest. I was just chicken shit.
So do you have like more projects like that coming in the future?
I mean, yeah, I auditioned for stuff and I was in a movie and I hope to do that. I write and I hope to film something one day in my life. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'd like to score a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love film. Film and music came to me at a young age and changed my life, both of them as extreme in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Yeah, so anything else you want to put out there, wrap it all together?
You want me to wrap it all together?
Yes, put you on the spot.
No, it's putting you on the spot. No, I mean, I hope people go check out the record, because I feel like they'll enjoy it very much.
Frances Trouble, there it is.
Yeah. There cool. she goes.
Well, thank you so much for coming by again. This was fun.
No, yeah, it was awesome. Seems it never rains in Southern California. Seems I've often
heard that kind of talk before. Yeah, that's a little bit of It Never Rains in Southern California, the biggest Billboard hit from Albert's dad, Albert Hammond Sr., who we chatted about a little bit. Yeah, I was glad that came up. I'm sure in his many years of doing press, AHJ has been asked about his dad many times, but I don't know, from the writings and interviews that I've read recently doing my research from the interview, I hadn't really seen him popping up. And, you know, like I mentioned, my dad was always playing those hits in the house off his like oldies CDs and stuff. And I knew those songs before I knew the Strokes. So it was cool to ask Albert about that just now. But yeah, thanks so much to him for coming by. That was really fun. I'm a big Strokes fan myself, as you might have picked up on, so talking to Albert is always a little bit of a trip for me. I enjoyed that. So actually, another person who is from Meet Me in the Bathroom, another New York City rock veteran, is going to be my guest on the show next week. To make sure you get that one, subscribe to the show. Hashtag Alternative Facts, all one word. That's the name of the podcast. We run usually on Thursdays, but I'm going to be popping up different days of the week. Keep you guys on your toes. That's going to be the plan coming up. We're going to be all over the place, but usually once a week, sometimes even two a week. I'm hopping on the Paramore Parahoy cruise tomorrow, and I'm going to be doing a bunch of podcasts on there. So all sorts of good shows coming from you guys. Subscribe to the show. Give us a rating. It's hashtag alternative facts at iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. And I'll catch you soon. Bye-bye, guys.